against Miller. Mr. Sutherland.
Good morning, Justice Brooke. Please, the court, counsel. This is a very important case. Defendants have not contested Mr. Campbell's main thesis, and that is that public strip searches and visual cavity searches by police officers using latex gloves to probe the buttocks and genital area as an administrative prerequisite to release from custody and being issued a summons is unconstitutional per se. Unlike the traditional jail strip search cases where the exact count of inmates can be questioned and each of them can be asked about their bookend travails and, if eligible, obtain money damages, Mr. Campbell's question of standing to obtain injunctive relief is much like this.
Although, counsel, you address this as an issue of standing or maybe alternatively mootness. My reading of the district court's opinion is that the district court simply held that your client had an adequate remedy at law, which is to say damages. There's obviously no standing problem for seeking damages, and indeed, therefore, your client had standing in the litigation. But the only thing the district court said was that he was exercising discretion not to issue an injunction because of the adequate remedy at law. Now, why was that decision an abuse of discretion?
That's the fundamental question. That is the key question, I believe.
But it is unfortunately not the question you briefed.
Well, I think we did brief it, Your Honor, if I may point out. The test in Lyons, as we put it,
Counsel, the district court did not rely on Lyons. Lyons is a mootness case. The district court said your client has an adequate remedy at law, and therefore I am, in my discretion, not issuing an injunction. Why is that an abuse of discretion?
Because it's not an adequate remedy at law. The typical plaintiff will go to trial in 2 to 3 years. And Mr. Campbell, as I was trying to indicate, like many others, may not even show up on a statistical record or an official record. He was, like many others, arrested and stopped and taken into custody, but no charges were filed. And so as the cases which we have cited on page 18...
I don't understand what that has to do with an adequate remedy at law.
Because
if your client is injured by, say, a defectively manufactured lawnmower, one normally thinks that the remedy is damages, not an injunction requiring the lawnmower to be made in a different way. Why is this case any different?
Because under the Fourth Amendment review, if you have a serious constitutional violation, as we cite, even the case of Daniels versus Southport, the Seventh Circuit case, there's a Second Circuit case, an Eleventh Circuit case, Ninth Circuit case, in which they say, if the plaintiff can allege a practice and policy of continuing violations, as we have done, in other words, the chief of police, every witness we called said this is the practice and policy, to, in fact, search individuals.
Look, are you making the argument that the irreparable injury doctrine does not apply to constitutional claims?
The irreparable...
Because if you are, that's an issue the Supreme Court of the United States has considered, and it's rejected that argument.
I think, Your Honor, that what we're talking about, if I may say so, is the second part of the Lyons test says...
District Court did not rely on Lyons. Lyons is about mootness. This appeal is about whether there is an irreparable injury.
If that were the case, Your Honor, every time there's a constitutional violation, then there would never be an opportunity. So when you have racial profiling, or in the city of Huntsville, when you saw them rounding up homeless people, they could not say that there was an adequate remedy for those people because they couldn't say that with any certainty that they were going to be arrested again or that the damages they specifically were seeking was going to remedy the problem. If mootness was the issue, and
mootness is not the issue. As I say, you are just persisting in not addressing the ground on which the district court decided this request.
Well, The judge Barker did identify Lyons. That's about the only case they cited in there. And they said it's discretionary because there's an adequate remedy at law. We are arguing under the second prong of Lyons there is not an adequate remedy of law because we can demonstrate a constitutional deprivation that is based upon a widespread policy and it occurs on a daily basis. That's the second part of Lyons that we are trying to argue about. And indeed, we made the point that every witness we called, including the chief of police, Jerry Barker, said, yes, this is our practice and policy. We will strip search everybody that we want to and conduct a visual cavity search in lieu of processing them in the jail. Now, how is that not the classic case which enjoys or should enjoy injunctive equitable relief? Because it'll go on time and time again. The problem, of course, is that Mr. Campbell came forward, but all those other individuals who are not showing up in the system, who are arrested and released, because they didn't find anything and subjected to the same thing, how do they obtain any relief? And that's what Lyons is supposed to address. The court in Lyons and the Supreme Court did not want to get into the daily review of individual cases. And indeed, a chokehold in Lyons was simply one type of force and a continuum of force issues. But here we're not talking about a continuum or any discretion. What we're talking about, as each witness said, if we're stopping these people, rather than taking them to jail where they could be legitimately strip searched or observed by making them bend over or something, those kinds of situations were in fact not addressed by the court. And indeed, what the court said was, take him to trial and see if there's any damages. But what was fundamentally not addressed, and it's what I said in our opening statement, is that this is an unconstitutional practice per se. Then what is the relief that is possible here if it's not equitable relief? Where are the
damages?
Pardon me?
Damages.
But how are you going to get damaged? I can't get a class like I can in the jail case. See, I can identify the people in the jail case. I can't identify the people if they don't show up on the system.
Excuse me? Mr. Campbell is your client.
That's
not
correct.
A class. No class has been certified.
That is correct.
You're saying you don't know whether Mr. Campbell was strip searched?
No. I'm saying that we can't identify all the other people, and that's the reason injunctive relief is appropriate.
The only question before us is what remedy is Mr. Campbell entitled to,
but
not what remedy strangers might be entitled to.
Well, the adequacy of the remedy is what we're looking at, and that's why Lyons looked at two parts here, Judge. That's the reason I respectfully disagree with you. The burden, which is the court's trial court said, if we can show that Mr. Campbell is likely to be arrested again, they say so in a footnote, which we can't do. But the second part of that is we say, as the courts have said, in homeless cases or where we've demonstrated, the plaintiffs have demonstrated a pervasive practice, then those kinds of cases are deserving of injunctive relief, whether or not the individual has personally a stake in obtaining money damages. That's what the profiling cases were about. Surely the individual plaintiff there could have get money damages, but his standing to get equitable relief and injunctive relief was because of the practice being acknowledged as it was per se unconstitutional. And that's what we're talking about in this case. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Ms. Oberholt.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Susanna Wilson Overholt, attorney for the defendants appellees in this matter. As the court has acknowledged, the issue before the court today is whether Judge Barker's denial of the preliminary injunction was an abuse of discretion in this matter. It was not, clearly. Mr. Campbell has an adequate remedy at law, as has just been discussed. This suit is Mr. Campbell alone. Mr. Sutherland would like for it to be a class action, but it has not been certified as one yet. Mr. Campbell, therefore, is the only plaintiff before the district court and before this court. In his complaint, in addition to seeking injunctive relief, he is seeking damages. He has pled this as a Fourth Amendment constitutional violation case under Section 1983, and he is seeking damages from a jury if we get to that point someday. This court and the Supreme Court have repeatedly acknowledged that in constitutional cases such as this, where a constitutional violation is alleged, that monetary damages are sufficient. Especially...
Well, they can be sufficient. They aren't necessarily sufficient in every case.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in this case, I would posit that they are sufficient because Mr. Campbell has not established any threat of future harm. And in those types of cases, those are specifically the ones where monetary damages are sufficient. Mr. Campbell has speculated by trying to draw on other individuals, by alluding to this class that does not exist. He has tried to create a specter of possible future injury. But there is no evidence before the court with respect to Mr. Campbell other than pure speculation that he is likely to have any type of encounter with the IPD, with Indianapolis Police Department, again, that would result in him being searched. Mr. Campbell appears to acknowledge, he has not alleged, that IPD officers are just randomly going up to citizens of Indianapolis or Marion County, Indiana, on the street and searching them. He hasn't tried to claim that. That would indeed be a bit preposterous, I think, to allege that. And there's no evidence that that is happening. The evidence is that Mr. Campbell was subjected to a single search on June 14, 2002. He has not been, he testified at the preliminary injunction hearing in the spring of 2003, that he has not been subjected to any type of search since then. He has not been arrested since then. He has not had any encounter with the police since then. So in terms of his own specific circumstance, in this time that has elapsed since June 14, 2002, when the search took place, not that he has not had another incident, and that runs contrary to his argument that he is facing future injury. Now, the other component of this, Mr. Sutherland talked about the practice and policy and the evidence that Mr. Sutherland claims was before the district court. The general order of the Indianapolis Police Department provides for an immediate and thorough body search being conducted incident to arrest. Chief Barker testified on the stand as to what the department's practices with respect to that policy, what his perception of that policy is. And he said that it was based, the searches that officers are to conduct should be based on reasonableness, based on the circumstances apparent to the officers at the time, based on their experience, based on probable cause known to them at the time, and ultimately officer discretion. All of those criteria are consistent with Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. Now, and then there was evidence regarding what officers may be doing on the street. There was no evidence, again, that all officers are engaging in this, in the type of conduct alleged by Mr. Campbell all the time. There was no evidence that they're engaging in this type of conduct with every arrest they conduct. Indeed, different types of searches are being conducted depending on what type of arrest is being made.
I don't understand what this has to do either with the district court's ruling.
Well,
you're now arguing as if this were a class action, but it's not. We just need to figure out whether the invocation of the irreparable injury doctrine with respect to Campbell was correct or not.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor, the reason I'm discussing, I made the point I just made, was because for Mr. Campbell to actually credibly claim that he may be subject to a search in the future, he needs to go down that road of saying that all the officers are doing this all the time, therefore I'm at risk. Otherwise, again, that goes to the point that he is not facing a threat of immediate harm in the future. Because there is no practice. He's trying to create a picture of a practice, but the practice he is describing is not what exists within the Indianapolis Police Department. And obviously, the mere fact that this is a constitutional claim does not relieve Mr. Campbell of his burden of showing that he is that he faces irreparable injury as a result of immediate harm in the future. He still has to reach that component to be entitled to injunctive relief. And the district court found that he had not met that burden. The district court's decision was based on those two prongs of seeking injunctive relief. And the court found that he had not met either of those prongs. So based on the fact that he has an adequate remedy of law, that there has been no evidence of him being subject to a threat of future harm, and indeed that there is not evidence that there is an unconstitutional practice in which the Indianapolis Police Department is engaging in, the district court's determination that Mr. Campbell is not entitled to injunctive relief is appropriate. And based upon that, we request that this court affirm the district court's decision. And with that, if there are no other questions, I would thank the court for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Overholt. Anything further, Mr. Sullivan?
How much time do I have? 2 minutes, thank you. In the defendant's brief, they cite on page 18, the only issue before this court is whether the district court's conclusions of law should be affirmed. So if I misread the issue of the trial court, so do defendants. And what I'm trying to make clear, Judge, is that the two parts of Lyons allow for, one, us to show that he's likely to be arrested again, which we think is almost impossible, or, with all of the cases we cited on page 18 of our brief, if you can demonstrate that it's a pervasive daily practice of an unconstitutional policy or practice, then the standing issue shifts to the second part of Lyons. And that's why we presented so much evidence, and that's why the defendants are so concerned. There wasn't a single witness that could demonstrate and articulate the basis for a progressively intrusive, embarrassing, demeaning search, such as a body cavity, visual body cavity search, or a strip search, but for the policy that was adopted, namely that instead of processing somebody at the jail, we will give them a summons, but they must bend over in the backyard or on the street and allow the officer with a latex glove to feel in his groin area. Now, if that doesn't require or doesn't invite an injunction, I don't know what does. How is anybody ever going to stop that practice? A simple damage claim? I doubt it. Two damage claims? I doubt it. What we have is a practice and policy, and under Lyons, we think that this is the appropriate kind of case. And indeed, all the cases, including the one from the Seventh Circuit, demonstrate that where you can show a persistent pattern of police misconduct, there is sufficient grounds for injunctive relief. So going back to your question, Judge Easterbrook, is this an adequate remedy? And we're saying it is not. Damages is not an adequate remedy for what is being sought here because of the constitutional harm that's being alleged. If it were, all that is required then as an arrest or if there's a show of possible damages, then that would frustrate literally every single case in which injunctive relief is appropriate. There are no other questions. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel. The case is taken under advisement.